Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go. It's the show that keeps sweeping Tuesdays, and we just love it dearly. It's the American Sports History Podcast with a brother, a mentor, and a friend, Peter Ray, in Cleveland, 2,500 miles to the west. I'm in producing this, Mark Mancini, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts powered now by Mancini Media. So as they lay the red carpet down, push the turkeys, the gravy, the yams out of the way, make way for the podium and give him the mic. Peter, it is the threes. How are you? How can people get a hold of you? And your wife is listening to this show. I know for a fact her favorite guest. Take it away, my friend, as I man the boards.
Hi, Mark. I'm doing well. I have a YouTube channel. It's my name, Peter J. Rea. You're absolutely right. Tonight's guest played Major League Baseball from 1971 to 1981 with the Chicago Cubs, Oakland A's, L.A. Dodgers, and San Francisco Giants. He won two World Series in 1970 and 74 with the Oakland A's. He stole 395 career stolen bases, tied for Dave Collins, 79th all-time. Two-time American League stolen base leader in 1974 and 76. More than 1,000 hits, the first Oakland A's DH. Won a National League title in 78 with the Dodgers. Three times led the American League in total chances per game. Twice in putouts, once in assists from the outfield on double plays. Welcome to the show. The starting center fielder and leadoff hitter for the coolest MLB team of all time. And my dear wife Alice's favorite podcast guest, Mr. Bill North.
Hey, Alice. Peter, I did all of that?
You did all of that, yes.
Yeah, boy, little kid from Seattle, Washington.
That's right.
13th Avenue.
Yeah, you did good. Bill, you were, it's been 6 weeks since you've been on. You had COVID, and then we had technical difficulties. And you, I remember you said that you were going to be on Voice of America. Do you remember that interview?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was a good interview. And I had a good time. Shoot, I finally hit the big time. That's an international thing.
What did they ask you about?
Well, it was mostly about my career and some of my philosophies and that kind of thing. It was wide ranging, I would say.
I enjoyed your interview with Shooty Babbitt.
Yeah, Shooty Babbitt. Shooty Babbitt, I remember a time back when he was playing for the A's, he had made an error or didn't make a play or something, and Billy Martin threw him under the bus the next day in the paper. And that, you know, that goes along with Billy Martin's real personality, but Shooty was, as I got to know him, being around the A's and that, and then he was a scout for 25 years, and he knew baseball. He's very astute and eloquent, and has a lot of good. He was a great interview. Yeah.
Good guy, yeah. I really enjoyed that. Looking forward to. Sounds like you guys are going to do it again. Really, good fella, and very, yeah, tremendous baseball career.
Yeah, he's like a little brother.
Right,
know?
Right.
I love him to death. He's a good man, a good strong man. He was raised by a good strong man, as I was, and it was wonderful to be able to have him express himself.
Yeah, I loved him talking about his father, and then the two of you talking about your mutual friendships with Vida Blue and Dusty Baker.
Yeah. Which was a gift to know both of them, and Shooty feels that way also because Baker's still here, and Vida, they were along the same lines. They were strong men, and we're always, you know, Baker and I have a friendship, but Vida and I have a friendship. that's been for 50 years too. And it's a thing that I miss Lila. I talked to Justin this morning, so I don't miss him so much.
I watched the baseball seasons, 1971. They interviewed, Vida Blue is in that if you want to look that up, if you haven't seen it. Satchel Paige made the Hall of Fame. Reggie Jackson was interviewed, called the 71 A's the Big Green Machine and the Jolly Green Giant. Vida Blue was on the cover of Time magazine. And then after the Pirates won the World Series, the announcer called him Bobby, and Clemente spoke in Spanish, thanking his parents for everything they'd done. And it also mentions how the Oakland...
Called him Bobby.
Yeah, and
his name was Roberto.
Right. And it also mentions how the 73 A's were the last team to have three pitchers to win 20 games, Catfish Hunter, Ken Holtzman, and Vida Blue. Any comments on all that?
Well, you know what? It was a joy to play behind both, all three of them. And the fact is, they get you in and out. Boy, hour 45, 2 hours max. You know, they all pitch fast and threw strikes. So, you know, that was back in the day when you could have a hour and 45-minute game. You hook Ferguson Jenkins up with Bob Gibson, you're going to be out. Real quickly. Ain't a lot of hits in there though. But yeah, there were pitchers that pitched with a good rhythm. Catfish was, he'd get the ball. I'll tell you a story about Catfish. You know, sometimes when he had to make a crucial pitch, what he would do in his wind up, he would knock his cap off his head to distract the batter.
Mm.
Isn't that heavy?
Uh-huh.
That's how smart he was. And, hey, man, he put one. That was one of those comfortable 0-for-4s on you.
Right. Yeah, you weren't
because
embarrassed.
You
didn't.
To the dugout. Well, you go back to the dugout every time and say, geez, I just missed him. But, you know, a pop-up or some ball you topped yourself. I just missed him because it looked like it was right there, but he twisted a little bit, turned it over a little bit, pulled on it a little bit, and you never saw the same pitch. You know, but what a great pitcher.
That's why you had guys like Pete Rose saying that he was as good as Rick Wise, Catfish Hunter.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Check that number 27 in the Hall of Fame. I don't think Rick Wise was a good pitcher, but he wasn't in Catfish Hunter territory. And I don't mean to disagree with Pete, but I will.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Catfish Hunter, the joy to play behind. You know, all three of them were, boy. Because it kept you, when Vida pitched, I'd come to the ballpark knowing that I wasn't going to catch many fly balls. Because a right-hander had hit the ball in right field, a left-hander would hit the ball in left field because he had so much gas.
Okay,
what a great era. I had a good time. That was a great era. I think the greatest ball players ever played a game. 54 to maybe 79. And those guys were just tremendous, smart players. Yeah,
I watched baseball seasons 1974. You guys beat the Dodgers in five games. Hank Aaron hit .715, broke Babe Ruth's record. In the video, Dusty Baker was interviewed, also Vida Blue, Sal Bando, Raleigh Fingers, Phil Garner, Dick Williams, Reggie Jackson, Catfish Hunter. The 74 A's were the first team since the 1918 Senators to have four players with 20-plus stolen bases. Bill North, 54, Bert Campaner is 34, Reggie Jackson, 25, and Herb Washington, 29. Any comments?
Hey, man, we could run. Force the issue. You know, that was a problem for in our lineup for pitchers to face our lineup because of the fact that you had me and Campanaris right behind me, and we could get on base and get in the scoring position without giving up an out. And those big and that, you know, pitchers don't want them lead off and them top hitters in the lineup to get on base because that brings up the big boy with runners in scoring position. And we did that real good. And especially the 7th to the 9th inning, we both stole it probably 90%.
Yeah, the baseball season 1977, of course, Catfish Hunter and Reggie were on the Yankees. And I talked to a guy who said he felt like, yeah, that bringing Catfish to the Yankees, he gave them that winning mentality he brought from Oakland. And then they won two World Series. And then Reggie hitting 3 home runs in Game 6 of the World Series. What was it like seeing Reggie and Catfish?
The fact is, though, in the game before that, his last at bat, he hit a home run.
Right.
And then he only swung the bat in that 3 home run game 3 times.
Incredible. What did you think when you were watching that, Bill?
Well, man, he said if he went to New York, they'd name a candy bar.
And they did.
And they did. You know, I maintain to this day, from what I saw, whenever everybody was watching, whenever they had all the cameras and the big crowds on TV, best ball player I ever saw.
Yeah, Mr. October. And I've been continuing to read Dynastic Bombastic Fantastic. Reggie Rally Jason. Catfish and the Charlie Finley Swinging A's by Jason Turbo. There's a quote by Joe Rudy about the low attendance trouble in Oakland. And Rudy said, quote, "With the mustaches, the characters, the long hair, and all the other stuff, if you put us in Chicago, New York, Boston, anywhere, they would have had us walking on water. In Oakland, they barely knew we existed."
Right. And I maintain, I'll co-sign that with the fact that that team right there was one of the greatest teams of all time. And to win 3 World Series in a row, but even more than that, to be on that team, you saw how proficient they were. And we drew over $2 million on the road, but that team there could have won more. But if we were in Boston or New York, Chicago, they would have been talking about at that time. They would have been talking about one of the greatest teams of all time.
Yeah, there's a quote by Reggie Jackson before the 73 World Series, and he said, quote, "If everything the press says about us playing best when we're mad is true, we got this thing wrapped up. I've already ordered me a new Rolls Royce."
And he did. And it was a Corniche. It was red, like a tomato red, with a tan interior. He came by one day and picked me up when he first got it, and we went riding, and I got to ride in that Rolls Royce a number of times, but he asked me if I wanted to drive, and I said no, because it ain't my car, but it was okay. A big hit. Yeah.
There's a quote here about, I think this is the 73 ALCS, Sal Bando, Catfish Hunter on the mound. Sal Bando visited the mound multiple times throughout Game 2 to work his magic on Catfish Hunter, reminding the right-hander about things like concentrating on the first pitch of an at-bat, not being afraid to waste a pitch, maintaining his arm slot, watching his mechanics, or just focusing. Gosh darn it, Catfish Hunter listened.
I doubt it. you know, I appreciate Sal helping Catfish Hunter pitch, but that's like the blind leading the sight, right? The people with sight, because of the fact Catfish Hunter knew how to pitch in 73, partner. You can bet on that.
But all those visits to the mound, did Hunter enjoy Banjo coming over and talking to him?
Well, Catfish was an easygoing person. And, you know, but he was a tremendous competitor. But I don't remember that because I wasn't in that series. But I know sometimes maybe Sal did, but Catfish just wants to get the ball and throw it. So I don't think he really appreciated too many damn visits to the mound. It broke up his rhythm.
Now, there's a quote here by Jim Bank, the Oakland's traveling secretary, and he talked
Jim
about Sal.
Bank. Look at that.
He talked about Sal Bando. He said, take Sal Bando away, and that team was nothing. If there was one guy who made a difference, there's no doubt in my mind that it was Sal Bando. And Reggie Jackson said that, quote, we all knew that Sal was the leader.
We did. Yeah, we did. We still been a good team, but Sal was he was truly the leader of that team, and he was a great captain, and he controlled a lot of things, but that team had such a, you know, especially the stars, they had an elan about them and a temperament that we controlled games, you know, and we always knew we were going to win. And Sal was a glue. He certainly was. I don't know what the team would have been without him, but I'm glad we had him. It certainly didn't. He was more of an influence with his temperament and his professionalism that you could see from the outside. But he was a man. He was a man.
So he had a calming influence.
And he was actually he was a liaison between a lot of players and the owner,
right?
You know, because he talked to Finley, and Finley would listen to him. But some guys he would set when Finley is tripping on somebody, he would cool that situation and control that situation and make it palatable. He talked to the player that Finley was trying to browbeat, and he had a good, you know, there were a couple of people on that team that were like that, maybe more than a couple, but they understood what we were trying to accomplish. And Sal was an example of how, because he always played the game correctly and went about the game in a proficient sort of way. And there were other people that saw that and were in that same kind of mindset to be able to visualize and internalize the game and realize what the fundamental concept and making the fundamental play, you know, there were some great plays, but the routine play is what we made all the time. And there was no going away from that. And Dick Williams was the man. He's the one. He and Sal Bando understood each other, and we respected Dick because all he wanted you to do was play the game correctly. And those players that played, especially the first nine. Those players that play knew their jobs and they stayed within their parameters. Nobody tried to do too much. And it was when you look at the game of baseball, this team was the most fundamentally proficient team I could imagine. And if you could bring another team and show me that they were more fundamentally sound than the Oakland A's, I'd like to see it.
Now, continuing this book by Jason Turbo, he's talking about Ken Holtzman, who came up with the Cubs in 1966 and got in the game against Sandy Koufax. Holtzman was Jewish. Koufax was Jewish. And according to the book, Holtzman's mother was a big fan of Sandy Koufax. And it says she wouldn't let her son into the house without him getting Sandy Koufax's autograph. So, and Holtzman said, she doesn't care what I do, just as long as she's up to date on him. And then after the season, Sandy Koufax retired, and Ken Holtzman said, I am now the best left-handed Jewish pitcher in the world.
Yeah. And I, fortunately, and what a gift, was I got to meet and know Sandy. And he would, when I was with the Dodgers and that, and what a classy man. And just a tremendous person. And I just enjoyed meeting him. And he was as classy as he was talented, or more.
In the ALCS in 73 against Baltimore, Ken Holtzman went into the 11th inning, and Dick Williams came out to the mound, and Holtzman said, if you pull me out, I'll kill you. I don't give a damn if this game goes 45 innings. I'm not leaving. Then he set Baltimore down in order.
Hey, man. You know what? Hey, Kenny Holtzman was a power pitcher when he first came up. But he throw you about nine, when he was with Oakland, he throw you about nine different speeds of fastball. But you know, he had lost some of his velocity, but what he lost, he could make up by changing speeds. You know, he was one of those that would throw you maybe 89 mile an hour fastball on the first pitch, throw you a 92 mile an hour fastball on the second pitch, and throw you a 94 mile an hour fastball on the third pitch. And he could take you up like that, and he could reverse that. And he knew what he was doing. And he'd go out there every time. And, you know, give me the ball, catch it, throw the ball back, and here comes the next pitch. You know, they all did that. They got the ball, never walked around the mound, and would get the ball and they'd throw it and keep in rhythm. And that also, when you do that right there, it makes the fielding better because it was like I saw Catfish Hunter throw 27 straight strikes in a ball game, and you never even knew it. 27 straight strikes.
Yeah, that's control.
There were some foul balls in there and that, but we were playing Texas, and they were five or six games behind, and they were building it up as a it was Texas. And they're building it up as a crucial series. And we went down there and we swept them. Catfish started first that game. They threw 27 straight strikes. It was like being in a ballet. You know, everybody was flowing together. And we were out of there an hour 45 or something like that. But it was, when you look back at it, all three of them gave you a rhythm, and that keeps your fielders on their toes, and they make plays. You know, pitchers that stand around and take a long time to pitch, you let your fielders' minds wander. And these guys say, we're playing a game. Let's go out here, do what we do, and get the hell out of here. You know, and now you got me talking about the Oakland A's. What a great experience I had with them. They were really, really a good team.
1973 ALCS. Game four would be a rematch of game one, Jim Palmer versus Vida Blue. As reporters milled about the postgame clubhouse after the A's won game three, somebody asked Vida Blue if he would be, quote-unquote, revenging himself for his opening loss. Revenging myself, asked the pitcher. You mean redeeming. Redeeming myself. Hanging curveballs were tolerable. Bad grammar was not.
Get him, Blue Boy. I like that. Yeah. But he was pitching against a hell of a pitcher, too. JP, he can pitch.
So you guys won the next game after the game. Let's see. I think you guys lost. Raleigh Finger said we had them by the
five-game series.
I think
it was best out of five. Yeah, toughest thing I ever had to do in my career was play against Baltimore because they were just like us.
Yeah, it went to game five. After losing game four, Raleigh Finger said, we had them by the nostrils and we let them get away from us. And then Vida Blue was too shell-shocked to even consider a response, but Blue Moon Odom wasn't. You shouldn't be talking, he cried at Fingers. If you don't give up that home run, we don't lose. Then the mercurial Georgian, Jiber of Jibes, Fighter of Fight, stepped toward the closer. Raleigh Fingers responded in kind. Watching the would-be combatants approach each other from across the room, Dick Williams gave a frantic nod to Reggie Jackson, who stepped between them, managing to talk down a fight that seemed all but certain. Later, Reggie went so far as to label the confrontation a positive for the team. Heck, he said afterwards, we'll probably score 25 runs tomorrow. You know us.
Hey, come on, man. You know, that stuff about us fighting and being mad and all that was overrated. Every team I ever was on had fights. You got 25 different personalities, and you're with each other. You're like brothers, and you know my brothers used to beat me up all the time. But that every team in baseball has fights because of the personalities. You know, like I say, they said everybody's a star, and leave your Letterman's jacket at home. But we were world champions, and people were watching us. And that thing, that fight between that you're talking about between Raleigh Fingers and Blue Moon Odom manifested itself in 1974 when we got to L.A. and we went to the ballpark, and there was the A's are going to win the World Series because they're fighting. Because Fingers and Blue Moon Odom got in the fight before that, and you know, hey, you can't. There are things that happen, and you know, some people aren't in the mood to take stuff. Sometimes that's why I always maintain that there are certain parameters that I didn't want anybody to do to me, and I wouldn't do to them. Due to somebody else. You never talk about the family. You never talk about my things that I don't want to mention them because they're little. Don't go in my locker, okay? But the other two are things I'll keep to myself.
I was watching game one of the 72 World Series. George Hendrick was playing center for the A's. And I was 12 years old watching that game. You were 26. You'd been playing with the Cubs. You were in the majors. And little did either of us know that the next year, George Hendrick would be playing center field for Cleveland, my team, and you'd be playing center field for the Oakland A's on the 73 A's.
Yeah. Hey, you never know. But like my brother, you know, you have that first trade, it breaks your heart. They don't want me anymore. And my brother told me one of the saneest things I ever heard. He said, instead of looking at where you've been, look at where you're going. I was going to the world champions.
We got a comment from Joey from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, said that Willie Hernandez died. I didn't know that. God bless Willie Hernandez.
Yeah.
The time has flown by. We're out of time, Bill.
Out of time already, Peter?
Yeah, it's a half an hour. It flies quick. We always have fun. Do you have any final words for our audience tonight, Mr. Bill Norris?
I love you guys. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Remember the North Legacy Project and take care of yourselves. Don't talk politics over the meal.
Right. Good advice. Next week we're going to have Mickey Callaway, who was a pro baseball pitcher from 1999 to 2009 with the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, Anaheim Angels, Texas Rangers. He played in South Korea and Taiwan, won a title in Taiwan in 2009, won a World Series with the Angels in 2002, was the pitching coach for Cleveland in 2016 when they pushed the Cubs to Game 7 of the World Series. And in 2 weeks we'll have the coolest center fielder and leadoff hitter for the coolest MLB team of all time, and my dear wife Alice's favorite podcast guest, because he has a good heart and he's a good man with a good sense of humor, Mr. Bill North.
Yeah, I love you, Alice.
Thanks so much, Bill. What a gift having you on tonight. Again, what a gift. Tremendous gift.
Thank you so much.
God bless
you,
Bill.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, thanks, Bill.
Eat everything in sight.
Okay. God bless you, Bill.
Thank you so much.
Dear listener, may the road rise to meet you. May the wind be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Good night, everybody. Thanks a million again so much, Mr. Bill North.
Thank you,
Bill.